2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast.
Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.
Now, as much as we absolutely love them, dogs can also be a bit of a handful, and they are full of energy and enthusiasm. So when they're out and about, they need to be kept under control. Basically, dogs need to be trained, but many owners just don't know where to start. And Tanya Clark is the head dog trainer with the DSPCA, and we asked her to come in and talk all about dog behaviour and give us some training tips. Tanya, it is so great to have you. And I'm just going to pull you right into that microphone if you don't mind.
Thank you.
So everybody can hear all the valuable information that we are getting for free on the radio right now, because there's going to be a lot of it. Obviously, you know, we talk about like dogs who are like a little bit older. Like I was chatting to Roz this morning about Willie. Her dog is 9, and it was like, you know, oh, he's a little bit older now. But is it ever too late to train a dog?
No, definitely not. Like, one of the oldest dogs that I rescued was 10. And she was probably one of the most enjoyable to train. She came from a rescue. She just was like so appreciative of having a home and so eager to learn and please. And she was probably one of the easiest dogs I did training with.
Isn't that so much?
So definitely, like, there's no stop off age for training.
Okay. And like, I assume, and we will get into like what age to start training and whatnot, but it is a continuous thing throughout their lives.
Absolutely. Like for cognitive function as well, to keep training with them as they get older.
Yeah.
It's beneficial for older dogs to keep their minds going, to be working with them and doing a little bit of enrichment with them when they're older, because it keeps them young and keeps them, their personality going with us for that little bit longer.
Keeps them interested as well.
Yeah.
Okay, amazing. Would you be better off getting a dog trainer, or can you do the training yourself?
Like, I think that there is no substitute for professional advice.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, we speak to a lot of people who are, you know, they encountered problems with their dogs when they're a little bit older. And the one thing that I would say is to train them young or train them early, prevention is better than cure.
Yeah.
And if you go with a professional trainer young or early into the stages that you've adopted an adult dog, then you're setting yourself up for success.
Okay.
It's so much easier to get a good start going rather than try and fix mistakes that we've made. And with people who, you know, have owned dogs their whole lives and have trained them themselves, some people do an absolutely amazing job. But the difference in it is that, like, if I teach my dog to sit at home without a professional, my dog will sit at home.
Yeah.
If I go to a professional for help, my dog will sit under distractions. My dog will sit if we're out and there's busy traffic, if there's dogs passing us, when people come into the house. It's working with that level of distraction that our dogs will focus under. And that's where professional help comes in, to be able to help you nail down those tools.
And I mean, let's be honest, the commands, we need them when we're out and about in the house. They're kind of fine. It's when it's a stressful situation and you're kind of going, oh my God, I need this to work. Why won't this work?
Yeah, this House is Angels, Street Devils.
Yes, exactly. Look, let's be realistic though. Dog trainers can be quite expensive. So would you recommend, like, what would you recommend for people who can't afford a dog trainer?
Yeah, so actually the DSPCA is just launching a subsidised training for people like that.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it's quite similar to the mobile clinic that we have for veterinary care.
Yeah.
If people are in receipt of social welfare or retired, they're able to apply for that. So that's just coming into play to help those people. What I would say is, like, to start early, if you don't fall into that category, like, just do a group class, do a basic level one class. The trainers are, like, they're a fountain of knowledge. It's not just go to the class, learn to sit and lie down. If you ask them a question that's not covered in the class, they'll accommodate it. So I do think that group classes are really beneficial. They're probably the most cost effective. They don't suit every dog.
Yeah.
But you can have a chat with a trainer beforehand and they'll give you solid advice on what you should go for, whether it be one-to-one or a group class.
What would you say then if someone is quite intimidated by the thoughts of training their dog because they think that it might take too long or it might be too hard?
I know so many people are. I probably myself would have been really intimidated to go to like a group class before, but I've had a dog that's been reactive. It's so much less intimidating to go to a class than it is to try and deal with it on your own. And sometimes the support that you get from other people in the class that are in the same boat as you gives you that little boost to keep going.
Yeah.
And no one's watching you. they're all focused on their dogs.
Yeah.
And everyone's as nervous as everyone
else. Kind of the same as going to the gym, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like everybody's just actually doing their own thing and they're trying to focus on their own dog. Speaking of reactive dogs, like, that is a different hurdle in itself. And like, reactivity can kind of happen at any age. It can start from being a pup, or it can happen because of a traumatic incident that has happened to said dog. So like, going to a dog trainer, I would imagine, is incredibly important. So you have the tools to figure out how to help your dog because they're scared.
Yeah, absolutely. And reactivity can come from different causes. Like, it can be overexcitement, it can be down to age and frustration, and it can be down to fear.
Yeah.
And it's seeking professional advice for the person to actually take a look at your dog, see how you're interacting with the dog, see the dog's body language, and be able to, you know, see the underlying cause of it to fix it. Because if your dog's overexcited and if they're scared, but you're getting reactivity from either of those two causes, the exercises that you need to do to help the dog overcome that are different.
Yeah. A lot of dog trainers will talk about socialization. What does that mean, and why is that important for someone who has just never heard the term before?
Yeah, it's so much more than what you expect it to be. So I think, like, the typical thing that you expect from socialization is to let my puppy play with puppies.
Yeah, no.
That's the fluffy one that we would like it to be. But it's actually so much more. It's, you know, teaching your dog to be calm around other dogs. Yeah. That's socialization. Exposing your dog to everyday living is socialization. And that's, you know, down to traffic, going for a walk, going to coffee shops, noises, different kind of people, like older people, young children, people with walking sticks, different kind of surfaces, going hiking, going to the beach. There's so much more in socialization than what is kind of like what you think.
Then just throw them into a pen, let them, you know, knock around with another 3 month old and then come back out again.
And actually, you know, just socializing a puppy with another puppy kind of creates a rude dog because they're like, if you just socialize toddlers with toddlers all the time, they like,
they don't know manners.
So like, there is a value in going to like a puppy socialization class where a trainer can have a solid adult dog that will teach your puppy manners as well as just allowing them to play.
That's a really good way of putting it, isn't it? It's just like letting toddlers and toddlers just, you know, make their own rules. It's like, you know, they actually need to know that there's boundaries for their safety and this is what we have to do with. We're going to get into some of the common problems now, but just if you would like to text in, you can text Tanya on 087-187-9200. If you have got any questions while we have her here, we will absolutely use it. Let's start with something that is a massive problem for a lot of people, and that is dogs jumping up on other people.
Yes.
This is huge. And obviously, the bigger the dog, the more dangerous it is.
Yeah. And you know, we almost reinforce it when they're puppies because everyone thinks they're so
cute.
Yeah. And it's fine. And dogs are almost like gamblers. And when they do get bigger, and you know, you've got that one family member that's like, it's okay.
Yeah.
They're enough to just keep that behavior happening over and over again, because a dog will just gamble for the one person who'll give in. I think for any behavior that you want to stop, the best thing is to put focus on what you would like the dog to do instead.
Okay.
And it's simple. It's sit. Every dog knows how to sit.
Yeah.
So we teach our dogs to sit, but keep their bum on the ground for a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Sit when they're excited. Sit when people come into the house. And the more we reinforce simple behaviours, the easier our dogs are to manage.
Yeah. And then obviously, you know, you do that. I assume you would like reward them for sitting, and then it just becomes a natural thing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I do this when someone comes into the house.
Yeah. And it doesn't always have to be food.
Yeah.
Because people come into the house, your dog wants to say hello.
Yeah.
You sit on this mat, I come and say hello. There's your reward.
Yeah. And then
like, they don't have to be barrels within a couple of weeks if you've got a busy household, people coming in and out. There's other rewards other than food.
Yeah. Thor runs and gets his teddy when people come into the house. He can't contain himself. He like, he'll shake his entire body. He'll see them and then he'll like fly off, grab his teddy and come back, and he just vibrates in front of them with it in his mouth. And all he wants to do is walk around in a circle, but he has his teddy and he's so delighted. And we're like, yes, you look
little
so cute
emotional
doing this
support.
As well. Exactly, yeah. And we've got a text in here that says, hi, my 9-month-old golden retriever got a shock from an electric fence up a hill where we go walking 3 weeks ago. He will not go up the hill anymore or any other road where there is a hill. Help. That's just the end of that text message. Anything they can do there?
So for what I would do there is try and take the emphasis off going for a walk there.
Okay.
go as near to the area as the dog seems comfortable. And I would just go and like scatter treats on the ground, encourage my dog to sniff and make it a game. Okay. And maybe before you do it in the scary place, find the treat in the garden, in the grass.
Okay.
And make it really exciting. So toss the treat on the ground, be like, oh, where's the food? Go get it. And then have that be like a really exciting game and something that, you know, you see your dog kind of brighten up when you say it. And then as you get near to the road where the dog's uncomfortable, play that game to just change how the dog feels emotionally about being in that area.
Yeah, it's not, they're kind of forgetting about this electric fence. It's now like, oh, we get treats. And then eventually it just doesn't become that terrifying anymore. Tanya, would you be able to pop some headphones on you? Because we just got a voice note in here. I'll have a little listen to this.
My 4-year-old black lab has started to become very possessive when we're out on walks if he finds anything that he can chew on, including now grass, to the point that he snapped and barked and almost caught my hand when I tried to clip him back on his harness onto his lead. So I'm just wondering what that could be a sign of and what we should do behaviourally to try and correct that. Apart from that, he's incredibly placid. You can put your hand into his mouth, no problem, and play with him. You can play with him even if he's near his own food bowl. He's not possessive over his food at all. It's only when we're out that he starts to become possessive.
Okay.
Wow. So for something like that that comes up quite new, I would always recommend to get a clinical exam on the dog, just to make sure everything is okay with him. Why is he eating grass? Why is he so intrigued on eating grass? There is a couple of management tools that you can have for that kind of behavior, like having a really solid recall to recall your dog away from something, or having a very good leave it cue. But that is something that I would recommend going to a trainer and have the trainer observe the behavior. Because for something like that, particularly if he's already snapped, you don't want to give advice without witnessing the behavior.
Yeah. And so, obviously you want to get to the root cause of what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah. So if it's new and it's an adult dog and it's something that's just started, go and ask the vet if it's everything okay.
Yeah.
In the meantime, manage it by keeping him on lead, practicing calling him back to you when you're out on a walk. Don't just wait until his head is in something. Make it nice and fun, call him away. And for something like that, the DSPCA, you can actually sign up for a behavioural assessment, kind of training assessment. I think it's €25.
Okay.
And you do it, it's a 15 to half an hour assessment where a trainer observes the dog's body language and then gives you the best advice as to what sort of training class will help you. So if the dog gets all clear from the vets, then the next thing I would do is have a trainer really quickly look over the dog, and the cost of it is redeemable back off any of the courses.
Amazing. Sorry, this is also like really important too, because obviously what you don't know where you're supposed to be going, you know, like as in like which class should I be booking into right now? So this is amazing. Another text in here from Christelle. It says, hi, I just got a Newfoundland puppy last week. Do you have some tips to train them on the lead? big dog.
Yeah, do it really early because they're going to get really strong.
Yeah.
I like anything like that when it comes to puppies. Basic puppy obedience classes cover everything.
Okay.
It's a 4-week class. You cover all of the basics that you need. And loose lead walking, it's not just about teaching the dog to walk beside you. It's about teaching the dog to focus on you and building a really good bond that the dog wants to be near you when you're on a walk. So for that reason, a group class is amazing because you get 4 weeks. You get to practice in between. You've got a trainer who gives you feedback after you've done the walking or after you've done the practice. And it's the cheapest class that you get the most out of.
Yeah. And especially when if it's a puppy, it's like, get it done now because this dog is going to get really, really big.
Yeah. And like your back will be broken doing it as a puppy, but you'll reap the rewards when he's like 50 kilos.
Tanya, we could genuinely keep you here all day, but I do want to ask you one more question before we let you go. If you've got a dog that barks constantly when they're excited, you know, like if the doorbell goes off or if they hear something like outside and they're yip-yapping away, like, is that something you can train the dog out of?
Yes, and I've actually rescued a dog that was like this. So I know how painful it can be. It's probably one of my pet peeves. So for me, when I got Nacho, he barked at everything, and mm-hmm. he still does bark sometimes. So what I did is I basically had like three stations set up around the house.
Okay.
And it was 24/7 training. If I hear a noise, I'm like, shh, what's that? And he had a little bed and he'd go and lie in his bed and I'd give him a reward on the bed.
Okay.
But it's kind of like you're adjusting the dog's behavior throughout the day. So you're constantly training them. It's not a 5 minute session that's going to fix it.
It's constant.
It's constant. So having your house set up well with treats lying around, having an alternative behavior that you want your dog to do okay. when he hears something outside other than bark.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, go to your mat and lie down for a sec and you get some treats there.
Okay.
And after a while, you almost, the dog hears outside and he's like, hey, the mat.
Yeah, let's
food.
Go.
Food. Yeah, but it definitely takes patience and time okay. to overcome something like that. And especially with excitement, because you don't want to be, you know, you're enthusiastic about something. Yeah. I don't want to curb it too much. I want to make you enthusiastic about something else.
Also, I'm like, you kind of have to use your voice every once in a while yeah. as well. I don't need to take that away from you. Tanya, we have got so many questions coming in, so we might have to get you to come back into us again if that's all right.
No problem.
Excellent, because we can tee it up and get the, we can just do a questions Q&A basically on
yeah,
the show.
Yeah, you can fire some questions across to us on our Instagram as well.
Excellent, on the DSPCA.
Yeah, the DSPCA dog training Instagram.
Dog training Instagram, fantastic. Tanya, thank you so much for coming
no
in
problem.
With us
You're
this
welcome.
Morning. And thanks for everything you do with the DSPCA, because you guys do such hard work all of the time. That was the amazing Tanya Clark from the DSPCA. You can check them out at the DSPCA training. Sorry, you're about to take a drink of water there as I'm asking you to reiterate the Instagram account.
DSPCA dog training.
The DSPCA dog training. We'll be right back after these.
2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast.
Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.